Any of you have read the book Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Okay. What is the answer? Okay. It's interesting because apparently a group of scientists over generations are trying to solve a puzzle, cosmic puzzle. So after many generations, they get an answer. The answer is 42. But now they are confused. What was the question? So an answer without a question is meaningless, though a question without an answer is meaningful. So today we have too many answers. Everybody is telling their own viewpoint. So how are you going to differentiate which is meaningful, which is meaningless, or even whether it makes sense? Yes? Yes, someone said something. You can. Yeah, so important thing is that we must have questions. And this is something which is very beautiful and unique, both about the great Bharatvarsh, proudly Indian. I'm proudly Indian, okay. And of course, in the practices of Sanatana Dharma, yoga, and Sri Aurobindo's own yoga, that you are not only allowed to question, you are allowed to question till your heart's content. Tell me the example of an Indian scripture where it's purely based on questions. Yes. Something very unique. Heard of the Gita? Is the Gita a set of doctrines, do this, don't do this, thus thou shalt do? Is it like that? It starts with a question, it closes with it, goes on. It's not like Arjun has asked a very simple question. Should I or should I not? Krishna doesn't want him to be just an obedient little something that I am telling you, I am God, therefore you must do it. He starts inviting more questions through each answer. And at the end, you have the entire cosmos, creation. Because to do anything meaningful in life, you must know the entire secret. Otherwise, it will always be, should I not? Because one must have the entire secret in the backdrop. So the Gita is very unique. First, it's on the battlefield. What does it mean? It means that, well, you acknowledge the fact that life has a very strong element of battle in it. Does it have or it doesn't have? Everyday life. We are witnessing too many battles nowadays and everybody wants battles should stop. But first we must understand what really a battle is and how we ourselves go through battles. And then at the end of it, as it's given on the battlefield, not in a quiet place, not in a quiet ashram, it goes through a series of questions. Even though some of the truths that Sri Krishna is saying is very clearly from the Upanishad. Sometimes a sentence or two, a shloka or two is straight from the Upanishad. But he doesn't say, you know what, Upanishad says so, therefore you must better accept it. Okay, so question is important. Why is it important? Yes?
When you learn to question things around you, you like deepen your curiosity. Understanding.
Yes, it helps in your understanding, very true. And something even more than that, yes.
It helps you grow as a person.
It helps you grow.
You learn so much.
You learn so much. Something else. See, all the greatest discoveries have been made by those who kept questioning till that last spot. Then what happens? Sometimes you have an aha moment. So if you know, nowadays we talk about original thinking, isn't it? Creativity and original thinking. Creativity and original thinking are unleashed. Suddenly the doors are flung open if you question. Not a casual question, but keep questioning. Till a point comes, then suddenly you will see and there is a new understanding, not just understanding, but a new understanding, an aha feeling. An answer rushing through some door, which is new and unique. which is your answer, not a book answer. And that gives you a great joy, because there is nothing more joyous than a creative surge. Experienced it, any of you? And sometimes when you feel the creative surge, there is a great joy, much greater than buying a object, much greater than scoring marks. Am I right or not? Tell me. Isn't it? That sudden creative moment, the aha feeling, it may be momentary, but it gives a much greater joy than anything one can ever imagine. So questioning opens the doors to a creative search. So must question, question everything. Question the questions that you have in your heart. What does it mean, questioning the question? Why am I questioning? That's also a question. Am I questioning simply to prove something? Am I questioning just because I want to prove somebody wrong? Then it's not a question. It's a deliberate attempt to stifle truth. There can be a question like that. It can be springing out of revolt. There can be a question like that. I just want to, you know, revolt. Why do you say this? That's not that it's invalid, but we must question the root of the question. There can be a question only out of doubt, because I have doubt for the sake of doubt. And there can be a question which is the real question, which is really with curiosity, with the spirit of knowledge, wanting to know. For example, when we see a lot of evil in the world, suffering in the world, we must question why it is so in a world supposedly governed by God, isn't it? We must question. Now this question can be asked in two ways. One is, God made the world. Why then there is so much suffering? Basically, I have made my answer and I am questioning only to prove a point that this is not God's world. You get the point? The other is, I believe, I have not known, they say that God is almighty and all knowledgeable, all love. Then why has he created this? Now there is a spirit of knowing in it. I want to know why. Okay? There is a difference between the two. Or I may revolt that, well, this is not what God has made. He has made a mess of things. I am going to correct it and become an activist. So there is a difference in how we question. So question the root of the question. You know the story of Socrates? Of, you know, he was supposed to be the wisest man in Greece. At that point of time, once he had gone out traveling, like you people are traveling now, and when he goes back, he is told everybody is waiting with garlands. And he said, what happened? He said, no, the Delphi, there is a temple of Delphi where once a year the priestess gets into a frenzy and she makes a prediction or oracle. You can ask a question and she would give an answer in that state of frenzy or ecstasy or inspiration. And they took it that this is the correct answer. So they raised once a question during one such moment, who is the wisest of us all? Because they want somebody whose authority they can listen to. Because after all, as they say, democracy and all that started, but it creates a chaos. Who is the wisest person? The king or the wise man? Who is the wisest? So they asked, and the oracle says Socrates. So Socrates comes back and he says, people are saying, you have been declared the wisest. He says, how come? I don't believe so. Just imagine how easy it is when somebody says you are the best. He says, I don't believe so. I must find out why am I being called the best. Have you ever questioned that? Why am I being called the best? So he goes and asks all the experts in physics, biology, psychology and everything. And he asks them questions. They go to a point and there they get irritated. For example, my teacher got once irritated when I said genes, but how do genes, what switches them on and what switches them off and why at a particular time they go, he said, don't ask these questions. Once a pujari got irritated when I asked him about karmic law and he said, you're asking too many questions. So he realized that actually nobody knows the ultimate answer, but they believe they know. But unlike them, I know that I don't know. So when you admit that you don't know, you open doors to infinite knowledge. That's humility. That's what humility. Humility is not about before others, oh, you are so wonderful. No. Humility is to know that however much one may know, one still doesn't know the ultimate, because it's endless, no? And it makes you feel young always, because there is always something to discover, something to know. But the aftermath of the story, I'm sure you all know, that despite the oracle declaring Socrates is the wisest man, he is poisoned. He is punished. Punished for being the wisest man. That's how things used to be that time. He was given hemlock. Because they said he is corrupting the youth. Why was he corrupting the youth? Because he was asking them to ask questions. To raise questions. Do you know of any other Indian figures? Great spiritual figure. Let me make it. Who encouraged the people of his time to raise questions. Yeah? Of course, Sri Aurobindo is more contemporary. He did. There are plenty of questions, but Sri Krishna, in his own time, people are paying taxes. He said, why are you paying 80% tax to Mathura? No, he'll do. Who told you this? No, he is invincible. Who told you this? And then they were doing this puja of Indra and all the gods. He says, why are you doing it? He said, no, he'll get angry. He said, that's not a reason why you should be doing puja. What about Govardhan? He is giving you so much. You don't want to worship this fellow, material hill, which is providing you everything. That's how he questions. He questioned every. That's why he had those final answers, even about how to. He was not going by any standard format, morally right or wrong, because people have said so. He was clear, crystal clear, what must be done, why the war must be won. Okay, that clarity. And of course, as you said, with Sri Aurobindo, the doors of questions are so many. So many questions from every angle people have asked the mother and Sri Aurobindo, and patiently they have answered. Sometimes the same question again and again and again and again. And each answer is something new and unique. That shows his compassion. He doesn't say, you know what, I have written an answer already. Please check it out. He doesn't do that. Why? Because each questioner, even when the question is same, brings a new angle. There is something very personal about a question. Along with the same question, but there is a unique angle. And therefore the answers are unique. They are not standard formats. So it is Sri Aurobindo who in fact says in a very beautiful article called Original Thinking, why India lost its glory, how to regain it. And one of the things that he recommends is that we can regain the lost glory by once again going through the process with which we had arrived at it. And that was asking questions. He says we should not be afraid of thinking, not afraid of asking questions. Because they open the doors to knowledge. Okay? So I don't know. I had no plan to speak something. And I was thinking that you will ask questions. This is just a background of why we should ask questions. Okay? Now your turn. Yes, please.
If we ask so many questions and then we receive so many answers, then how do we know which answer to like believe or to...
Don't believe anything. See whether it really satisfies the questioning mind. Don't believe. I'll give you an example. So one of the ways that in tradition you are taught about why there is suffering is the law of karma, isn't it? A problem with the law of karma is non-verifiable. It explains, but it's not verifiable. It explains that why some people go through problems, some people are lucky, so-called, but how do you verify it? So you should raise the next question, like any scientist, how do I verify it? There is some way that they who have written it must have written it. And then it jars with the idea of, oh, that means God is basically a judge who is rewarding and punishing us. That sounds strange. poor fellow has no other job. Yeah, I'll just come. I'll just complete. So you should raise questions. I'm not answering this question, but I'm saying keep questioning till you reach that answer which rightfully makes you your thirst. And I give this example. You are thirsty. You get Coca-Cola. It used to be at one point a custom in India. I don't know whether now, at least in Delhi and Punjab side where I used to go. The moment you came, they didn't ask chai pani. Huh? It was lassi or Coca-Cola. So Coca-Cola was like brand. So when you drink Coca-Cola, what is the problem? It doesn't quench your thirst. It just gives you a momentary kick. You feel thirsty. So you want something which can quench your thirst. So see whether your thirst is quenched or not. Now it may be quenched at a point of time, but maybe a little later a new question may arise. And fair enough, you should ask it till you reach the ultimate answer. Yes.
If we don't know the answer, other people are getting a wrong answer, they also must have thought about it, right? And that's why the director asked, how do we know what is right?
Right. So I'll ask you another question on that. Can we think an answer? Or is there something more to answer? They have thought about it. So equally you can explain the same phenomena. Exactly the same phenomena. Based on different kinds of thought. I can do it right away. Okay. So which of this is true? So that's why it is so important to know the heart of the question. Why? One is a question which is just like, you know, I have to ask a question. Okay, let me ask a question. Another is, what really is prompting me to ask a question? Like for me, asking about God's existence was existential question. I was studying in FMC, doing my MBBS, and I saw there are a lot of people going, and you know, there were joints, not lot but 10% who would go take joints, drugs. And I was 17, so usual thing is, why not me? Everybody's enjoying, why not me? So then this question came up, what is the meaning of life? I must first answer that. If there is nothing like God, nothing like any purpose, then it doesn't matter. Then I might as well enjoy like everybody else does. But if there is a meaning and a purpose, I must dig deep into it. So that's how it became an existential question. Yeah. Did you find? Of course I found. That's why I'm here. I won't do anything without. I kept on going deeper and deeper. Read a lot. Met a lot of people. Read practically every book. Well-known book in Indian tradition. Vedas, Upanishads, Gita. Different commentaries and Western literature, philosophies. It didn't satisfy my query. Yes, so because of questioning I was reading, but always there was something left unanswered. Like one of the problems that I had is that now Indian scriptures, see Western scripture I could see through it. What scriptures means, Bible etc. is okay, but even philosophers like Goethe, Kant, I read all of them. So it didn't answer. Then in Indian scripture things came close, but still at the end world is an illusion. And you know, it's ultimate goal is your moksha, individual moksha. I said, this is too selfish. So I entered a state of agnosticism. So agnosticism was, I don't know the answers. It was not like I'm abandoning the answer. In a way, I'm saying none of them is satisfying me. Maybe the mind cannot know the final answer. So I became an agnostic. Okay, so this, I'll just share this little experience. So I was 23, around 20, before I went out, 21, I medical college, I became an agnostic. So agnostic is a very strange situation. You are uncomfortably comfortable. I'm not carrying the burden of knowledge that I have to act this way, that way. But at the same time, I'm back to square one, that I don't know the meaning. So what do I do? So in that state of agnosticism, which must have lasted an year and a half, when I myself decided, okay, I can't know the ultimate meaning, so let me make my own meaning. So I said, anyways, I have become a doctor. So let me be a good human being and a good doctor. That's within my... So it was a pragmatic answer. And I was in the Indian Air Force, so that was a great kick. So, well, so this was... This I took it as a proviso goal of life. And then... Yeah, I'll just... One moment. So I ended up casually entering... See, when you have a question, it is true that the cosmos answers. Or the divine answers. So I was led into a bookshop. Books were my favorite. I mean, there was no online that time. And I would go and say, ye sab to padha hua hai. Then I saw a book called The Synthesis of Yoga by Sri Aurobindo. Name did something. And I said, who is this? I have not read. I thought I have read all the books on yoga. Works of Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna, all of them, Raman Maharshi. Who is Sri Aurobindo, whom I have not read? So out of curiosity, I opened the page. And it was written, all life is yoga. Now, this is very strange. That made me feel that here is my answer. Nothing else was, it was not described. But it was like, aha, this is what I am looking for. Not an otherworldly moksha. Not a selfish salvation. It gave me a feeling that this is my answer. I must find this. And the same day, as I said, Providence has it. A friend of mine who is also now a psychiatrist, gone to the US, he gifted me the secret of the Vedas. So I was on cloud 10, not even 9, okay? I was so happy that, I got finally. That was 24 years, at 24 years of age. And then I read, and every time the answers came very clearly. Whatever questions that were risen in my mind, everything got answered, not just answered with... believe me, like that, but very logically, very sequentially. And of course, there is a point where you also know that now, if you want to really know with ultimate certainty, you have to enter into the realm of experience. So I said, wonderful, now it very naturally took me into the yoga itself. Okay, yeah.
So if you have a question,
yes, good question. Whom do we ask? If your question is sincere, be sure that you will get answers from everywhere. It is something, I don't know whether you have noticed or not, this phenomenon actually people have tried to explain in different ways. Supposing you want to construct a house, or, well, let me come to, buy something, you know. You will see suddenly your eye will catch a billboard, your eyes will suddenly, something will come into your purview, which is sort of helping you. Yeah. So there is guidance in life. This is true. This I can say now for sure, going through all the experiences of life. Well, almost all. Nobody can ever say all. So you will start getting answers. To start with, the AI will pick up your question in your mind and start sending you WhatsApp, okay? Or the YouTube feed. Doesn't matter. So go through. Don't start with preconceived ideas that this must be the answer. Start with an open mind. Don't worry. People are very scared of open mind. Oh, my mind will get into a different direction. If you are really open-minded and you have the capacity to think, you will see through the facade. Don't get into I am a left or right or center. No. So slowly you will see that your quest will carry you layer after layer. It is power. This questioning is a capacity. It's a power. Somebody has raised the question in you. Let me put it in the Gita's context. Sri Krishna raised the question in Arjun. Mother has spoken about it. When people were not asking questions, he said, why don't you people ask questions? She was not very happy about it. And at one point she says, I am throwing questions at you so that you may ask questions, but none of you is interested. So because then you become receptive. So you go through, doesn't matter. You can't say, on the first person I hear, the first thing I click, that should be the answer. No, it won't be. It may not be. It may be. So that's called open-ended. It's like when you go to a shop, there are two ways of buying. Okay, you go with clarity in mind what you're looking for. You find something and you pick up. Second is you have an idea what you want to buy. Sometimes have you noticed the first thing that you picked up was the thing. But then you look at other options. at the end you say, no, that was the best option, maybe. So still when you have gone through, there is a difference than when you picked up the first option. So at your age, I would suggest that go through things, doesn't matter. Don't be worried or afraid that what may happen. I'm talking in reference to question, that go through the options. You will see, you'll mature, you'll grow, because mind will become wide, it'll begin to look at the propositions from different standpoints, and eventually your quest will decide where you will end up with the option, the final answer. Final answer is usually doesn't come in the beginning, because one has to be ready. So go through that process. Don't worry about which is the correct answer, it'll come. You will feel inside fulfilled. Like people say, how do I know who is to guide me on the path? This is another problem, no? Too many gurus, guru shopping, guru marketing. When the guru who is meant to lead you comes, then all that aspiration suddenly falls quiet. You know that here is the master meant to me. It doesn't mean that he should be the master meant for everyone. That is propaganda. That should not be done. But for me, here is the master. That brings a kind of wideness. You are faithful to what you have seen, but you don't try to convert. You know, conversion is a sign you don't have enough conviction about whom you really have faith in. Therefore, you want numbers. People who try numbers, they feel security. You heard, oh no, famous actors are coming here to this master. That doesn't mean anything. Actors may be stupid. What does it matter? So many people are coming here, therefore the master is great. How stupid a logic? Michael Jackson dance and Amitabh Bachchan's night, many people, many more will come than to a little talk like this. How does it matter? So you see the premises, how false they are. If they are more adherent, that means great master. It doesn't, logically it doesn't sound, but people accept it. See how unthinkingly we can go. Yes. Yeah. Yes, you can ask.
So the world, like our, even like our current timeline, there is so much suffering and there is so much that I think people in our society have to understand. But then how can we have faith in our society to ask the right questions so that we can actually do it down there?
Okay, how can we have faith in our society to ask the right question? I am going to give a very paradoxical answer, okay, to start with. Society has never answered the questions of an individual. It has asked people to conform. Because the person who raises questions, see, how is social order maintained? There are a set of rules, there are a set of beliefs. So society just tells you some kind of answer to, because nowadays there's an age based on which you are supposed to follow whatever society has asked you. I'll give you an example. During periods, in ancient societies, it was like don't go to a temple, don't go for a bath in the Ganges, etc., etc. Some people still follow it. Now when you ask this question, because today's time we are asking questions, so people give all kinds of weird answers. Okay. But isn't there the simplest of direct answers that that time there were hygiene issues? Now we have Padman. We don't have those issues. But people give you an answer because it's often a concocted answer. So that's how certain traditions have to be broken and one has to go past them. Right? Karwa Chauth ka brat. I used to ask, why can't a man keep? So, first thing I did after marriage, you're not keeping all this vrat, etc. He said, no, but I like it. I said, you like to dress up, it's fine. No problem. Dress up and keep. Quietly eat food. Don't pray for my long life. Then I have to reciprocate and I don't like doing that. Anyways, there are many, many of them. Okay, Kabir Das raised many questions. So, what I mean is society won't give you the answer. Because individuals who raise questions, they are the harbingers of change. They are always ahead of the society. If the society could answer all the questions, it would always be advancing ahead of the individual. But that's not the fact. Change comes when individuals ask questions. Society will give you its own answers. But where you have to ask the answers? You have to ask the answer from other individuals who went beyond the social understanding and discovered something new. They are the masters. Who are these masters? The gurus. Not guru means guru type. Anybody wearing a ochre robe becomes a guru and says anything nonsense anywhere. I'm not talking of that. You look at the life of the masters. How they have gone beyond the conventional understanding. And they have discovered something new. Krishna is an example, as I said. Rama is an example, by the way. Mirabai is an example. Many of the great masters, of course, Aurobindo and the mother, they went beyond the understanding framework of the society. Now, when you go beyond, one way is that you discard the framework as nothing. It had its meaning. So, again, as I said, not going to a temple during periods had its meaning. When you didn't have hygienic measures, the understanding was not so much. So, naturally, if you bathe in a ghat of the Ganges, you are likely to carry infection. So it makes logical sense. But now, that meaning, you have to understand the spirit behind the customs and traditions. Society is largely a mass of custom tradition everywhere in the world. Not only in India. Everywhere. It's just that the form changes. Everywhere. There are many unspoken totems, taboos, customs, everything. You'll be surprised. For example, in India, people say, oh, there are too many taboos. So, I say in the US, you have equally too many taboos. I'll give you an example. If I move on the road wearing a lungi, you will look at me askance. You may not say anything. Why lungi? If I have the color of the skin is black, then you have done my racial profiling without. And I have so many experience of it. So, there are certain taboos. Like having a dark skin may be a taboo, which is so stupid and silly. Krishna is dark. Kali is dark. They are great gods. Krishna is Shyam. I'm just saying that now this is how we have to understand the individual spearheads. But the traditional society has... You have to go to the roots. If you go to Upanishads and all, yes. They were all spearheading. I'll give you one example from Chandogya Upanishad. One story. So the story goes that, and I'll pause and ask you your answer. So the story goes that there is this young chit of a boy, his name is Satyakam. So Satyakam, when he's 5, 6, he says, I want to study in that Gurukul of Rishi Gautama. So mother says, we can't, they don't take everybody and anybody. We are just nobodies in the society, you know. She is a maid servant. So she says, you can't, but I want the highest knowledge. So, you can go and ask, knowing that he will come back discouraged. So, he goes and asks the seer, Rishi, that I want to have the highest knowledge. That's what was taught there. So, he says, well, let me know your father's and mother's name. Because they wanted to see whether what lineage, heredity. They used to believe in heredity. Now, we also believe in heredity. So, heredity, because it has some impact. So he goes back and asks his mother that, Mom, I've never seen my dad. Can you tell me something about him? Mother says, I really don't know who your dad is. Because I have served many masters as a maid. But this I know, that I am your mom. The boy goes and says, verbatim, my mom says she doesn't really know who my dad is. But this she knows, that she is my mom. Now, pause. What will be the reactions today?
They were discriminated for not having...
Everything from such a lineage, such a this thing. What kind of people are coming, isn't it? How did the Rishi react? He says, see, this is what is called the original thought. How these scriptures open the doors. He says, that a woman who has the courage to say this so frankly and straightforwardly comes from a very high order. Maybe her situation and circumstances have made her what she is, but she belongs to a very high order of humanity because she has the courage to admit truth, and therefore you are in. Now you see, this is the master of the one of the Upanishadic stories. But today's society cannot follow masters even. You tell this in even those who believe in, let's say, the Upanishads, go and tell them, see how they will react. So society is unable to follow even these spearheads. How many people do you think, there's so many Krishna Bhaktas, no? All over the world. How many can really, really, who are living what Krishna has taught? Didn't he say that your relatives, your dada, your guru, your cousins, they are not important? Arjun, dharma is important. How many are able to live? Those who vouch in the name of Krishna. How many will have the courage to say to their own child, my child, remember the great teaching, it's not about me, it's not about you, it's not about X, Y, Z, it's about dharma. Now what dharma is, I am not discussing.
She's asking, what is dharma?
I was just about to say, that I was just answering your question, that I am not touching dharma right now, I'll come to that. How many will say that? They will instead say, dharma is what parents say, to obey the parents, isn't it? To obey whatever social norms are there. Did Rama do dharma or adharma? We'll go into dharma step by step. Did Rama do dharma or adharma by going to the forest? Let's start from there. How and why? Yes?
He followed the orders given by his father.
No, this is where the problem lies. No, he didn't follow the orders, by the way. Yeah, I'll tell you.
Conflict was there, but when Krishna explained that it's not about fighting your family, it's about fighting what's good and evil.
Okay, so I'll start first with the facts. Rama, when his father says that this is the dilemma, first of all, father didn't give the order. Father is depressed. His foster mother, who loved him very much, by the way, before all this, she is depressed, and he says, what is happening? Because tomorrow is supposed to be his coronation. And they are all sitting in a state of depression. He says, Dad, what's the problem? He says, I can't tell you. He looks at mom, what's your problem? Stepmom. So obviously, she says, see, basically, this is my demand. And the dad is faltering now. He had promised, now he is faltering. Rama says, that simple, I'll go. Now, next day morning, the dad reverses consciously. He says, no, you're not going. This is documented. Lakshman also tells him, we will raise a revolt. We are going to fight. Lakshman says that in so many words. Bro, you're not doing something very right. You know why Rama does that? Because Rama, it's not about dad obeying. But Rama wanted to set a higher standard in society that if you have promised something, fulfill it. That's called promise was the law. You didn't need a paper. Imagine a society where a man or a girl or a boy promise, I'll stand by you forever. I don't need a piece of paper on which you have to sign that we are married. No, that's my promise. You know who can keep that promise? What it needs to keep a promise? You see how difficult it is? So Rama took the road less traveled. All the people wanted Rama to be there. All the people, father has reversed the decision. Mother, yes, stepmother is still sitting in her angry mood. Brothers are saying, you can't go. But Rama wanted to set a highest standard amongst human beings. Somebody has to show the way that, look here. That's how it was from the lineage of Raghu. What was the lineage of Raghu? Must be knowing. Raghukul, Reet Sada Chaliyai, Pran Jai, Par Vachan Na Jai. It's very powerful. Just imagine, just keeping one promise is so difficult. It shows a man's character. That is the reason why he goes. He doesn't go. Of course, there is an occult side, but we need not go into it because Rama is an avatar. He doesn't know that his mission will be fulfilled. Even Sita's going with him is not according to the traditions. She should have stayed back and looked after in-laws. They would have said, you are on a holiday, you are going in forest with Rama and Lakshman. Nobody, no danger. With these two fellows, you are going to have a good time. Who will look after us? And that's the logic people give. Even Rama tells her. She says, no, this is my dharma. So, every aspect of Ramayana we could discuss. I know there are many questions. But dharma is basically whatever helps the individual or the society to get closer or fulfill either your own deepest truth or takes the society as a whole closer towards something higher, more beautiful, more divine. That is dharma. It is not a set of rules, regulations, traditions, customs. And I give this example. I used to raise these questions. So I mean, as a youngster, much younger than you all, 10, 11, I used to raise this question. My parents were very nice people actually. But I used to tell them that why should whatever parents say should be obeyed. So they're very nice, simple people. They didn't have the answer. They would just say, like, probably that's how we have been. And I said, not you guys, but supposing a father wants the son to kill his wife because of dowry or to take dowry. Should he do it or should he not do it? Tell me the answer. Clear, no? How did you get the answer? That's where your heart says. This is the seat of answer. That's why I'm saying your heart gets satisfied. Can you justify it under any tradition? I mean, logics, yes. Okay, after that, the girl, whatever had to be given, was given the 100 justification. But times have changed. Now, law allows equal property rights of boy and a girl. It shows the weakness of character of a man who wants, a daughter to bring money. Isn't it? So if you look at it that way, it's not about tradition, customs. It's about the truth of your being. You get the point? Who had asked about dharma? You had asked. Little bit, you are able to get that. So dharma has three meanings actually, now that you have asked. One is, comes from the root word dhra, that which holds you, the core. From there, dharma begins. So if I ask, what is the core? So what is the difference between asura and the devas? Asura, take it that the core is physical, body and vital desires. That's the truth of life. So if that is the truth, then I can loot, I can plunder, I can enjoy pleasure any which way. Core itself is not dharma. But if I say the core is something divine, the highest I can conceive of, then automatically dharma flows from there. Second is dharma in terms of everyday life, unfolding of life. And who will tell you what is dharma or adharma? Your heart will tell you. I can give any amount of example. Supposing you are going on a street and you see that a woman is being hurt or harmed. What should be your attitude? Should you say karma? Her karma. Isn't it? But there are people who say that was the karma. That was her karma. She had to suffer. How silly, no? But something in you says, no, that's not right. Deep here. Okay. Then what should you do next? In every which way, according to your capacity, of course, you should see that you should raise your voice, raise your concern. If not possible immediately, subsequently, reach out a helping hand. All that is part of your dharma. Because it's the unfolding of the truth within you. And from there comes your external actions. Yes.
So we were talking about society versus individuals.
Yes.
Even that class is a society of sorts. And I think girls, lots of you have a problem of feeling judged or going along with judging others because you want to be part of that judgmental society. So if you have any questions regarding that, I just thought.
Yes.
In society, most individuals have questions, but only a few individuals get to decide what and how society should behave and act.
So. Yes, so individuals in a society mostly suppress their questions. And one of the reason is they want to conform. The reason why they want to conform is because they want approval. It's a peer pressure. So they want approval. Now, the moment you bring in approval and like movies, many movies are made for box office. It may not be a good movie, but it's made for getting approval of the average person. So what happens with problem of approval is you don't become yourself, you become somebody else. You never become yourself. You never get to know yourself. And because the average human being is an average human being, the masses are always average. Pyramid structure, you know, no? It's like that. Therefore, you will perforce become average. The moment you seek approval, not only you are not yourself, you will become average. You will become like everybody else, defining yourself as 99%, 99.9%, etc., etc. So, why all this happens? Again, if you go still deeper, you will discover there is somewhere fear of being left out. What is it? FOMO. Fear of missing out. Fear of being left out. Lack of courage, lack of faith. All these are intertwined. And courage and love are two most important virtues in a human being. Cultivate them consciously. How to cultivate them? They go together. A person who is full of fear cannot really love. He cannot love God. He cannot love a human being because he's always worried. He's always afraid. Okay, so courage. How to cultivate courage? Cultivate it by reading the stories of those who have lived courageously. That's how one slowly gets into that. So one should raise questions. But as I said, and this is the age, by the way. After 25, you will fall in line. You are caught in a race where you will feel like, oh, that was lovely. I used to raise questions, but you know what? Now I am settled in the USA. That's how it is. I met people, plenty of them. They are the majority. So you have got into that rat race and you can't be a lion anymore because to be a rat and numbers, that's what becomes. Now imagine a rat race, even if you come first, as they say, you're still a rat. So read that story of Jonathan Livingstone Seagull. So those who cannot have that courage, they end up just on level ground, which is okay if that's the life one wants. But man is not meant to remain like that. Man is meant to fly, climb much higher, to unleash new possibilities. Therefore, one must raise questions. And equally, those who are individualistic, since your ma'am said very true, actually they don't judge. You know why? They don't need what others are, what they are not. It's a person who is truly an individual, for him it's none of his concern. Also he understands from a wider angle as we evolve that, well, each one is according to his own law, according to his own stage of development. He has faith in the divine. All this comes, it's a package. So he's never, you know, bitter or cynic about life. He doesn't become a cynic or bitter about life. And yet, if at all, he sees society which is taking a blatantly a route which is, as I said, about dowries and things. How will he bring the change? He will start with himself. That's what Rama does, shows the way. He says, I don't accept it, come what may. So when you start that, there is a courage that I'll do differently. then slowly you will see, you may be just given this much, but that's a great little much. By the very fact of displaying courage to go, to follow your own heart's deepest truth, you open the gates to others. Don't worry. Society will say you may be wrong. Even you may be wrong, it doesn't matter. But you have at least taken a step forward. And if your intention is right, even if the step is wrong, let me tell you that destiny and God will carry you further. Because intent is most important. So people are very afraid. What if I do this? For example, when they go for career choices, what if I don't succeed? What if I, don't come to nothing? Everybody will tell me this or that. Doesn't matter. There's a great joy in living by the truth of your being. And of course, I am repeatedly saying truth of our being, because individualism doesn't mean I'll go and drink and dance and do. Yeah, it's up to each one. I'm not saying, I'm not judging anybody on that. But that's not individualism. That is still worse than mass consciousness. That like living like an animal. Animals also live in a herd. So that's okay. That's their choice. Yeah. Yeah. So asking something. Okay. Don't judge people. It's never good. Don't judge yourself also. Most of the time we don't have the eyes to judge, no? First we must gain knowledge. First thing in life, true knowledge. That's a great power. To teach yourself discernment, how to truly understand. As I said, knowledge is very important. It's a power. And then you will see that love will fly on wings and work will be, they'll leave a stamp of permanence, near permanence on whatever you do. Knowledge, true knowledge, not just book knowledge or informational knowledge. Yeah. Yes. Yes, that's different. I'm talking of judging people. Yes, judging knowledge, I already said, don't be satisfied. They're halfway things. So judging in that sense, also judging non-judgmental doesn't mean I'll do anything that I feel like. That's not. Discernment is important. Non-judgmental doesn't mean that, okay, I'll have dinner with a pig. It's okay, I can have it. I won't judge somebody who's doing it. But I'll use my discernment sufficiently to understand what I want in life. Non-judgmental doesn't mean that my friend suddenly says, hey, chalna hai, let's go, we'll have a nice, movie. I may not have wanted to see the movie, then I say, I'll not go for this movie. If I want to see the movie, I'm fine with it. If it suits, so make your own choices, conscious choices. Don't judge him because he is going for something. No, not that. But you must have your own discernment. That's why I said knowledge, true knowledge. Discernment is an aspect of knowledge, very important. Otherwise, it becomes a khichdi. Everything is same, everything is all one. No, it's not true. I'll tell you one of the cliches which I questioned once and, properly we had a proper debate. One of the cliches is, all religions are the same. Isn't it? So in one of the meetings I said, no. If all are the same, then what is the point? Any religion can interchange with anything. Why you are trying to convert to start with? That means there are religions which believe they are superior to start with. Now, I'm not talking of the deeper truths. To start with, if all religions are the same and everybody believes it sincerely, then nobody should try to convert anybody. Isn't it? Because it doesn't matter. So what you convert? So you believe there is something superior, something inferior. Now, we can decide what is superior, what is inferior if you want to put it like that. What we can say is different religions serve different needs of human beings at different levels. Some religions believe that you should relate with God as a servant or with fear. Fear. Not servant, but with fear. There are some religions who say you must be afraid of God. Okay, God is there. But he's a God who can punish you. Better be afraid. There are other religions which teach to be friendly with God. Love God. So is there a difference or no? There is a difference. God is same, but how you are imaging a God. God as judge, God as a playmate. God as all of these above. So it makes a difference. So different religions cater to different needs and stages of evolution. I don't want a judge to be my God, at least. I want a friend. Somebody whom I can love, somebody with whom I can do. There is a Hindi word that is coming to my mind. Atkhelia. What is atkhelia? Okay, check later on. I can be naughty with somebody whom I can play, who can counsel me also, who can hold my hand in crisis, whom I can love, maybe even as a beloved. That is different from God is a judge. Don't get too near to him. You can't even go near him. He judges you. And I'm not saying this is right or wrong. It's like, what do I want? That's all. My need of God is happy God, loving God, smiling God, hand-holding God. That's the difference. Yes, you were saying something. What kind of God? Yes, okay.
Don't you think that all religions are just different perspectives about the same thing, like how to live a modern life and how to be a good person?
Oh, very difficult to lead a modern life if you really seriously follow the tenets of religions.
If you follow any religion with your whole heart, then it's going to be...
Very difficult to lead a modern life, I'll tell you. Because supposing you, I'm giving you one example. And any religion now, I'm not talking of this or that religion. In most religions, you should marry within the fold. Supposing you love somebody who is outside the fold. What do you do? Your religion will punish you. There are religions which even prescribe dress codes. So modern life is gone ahead of religions.
There are so many parents that disown their children as well if they marry outside
the... Exactly. And they blame it on religion. On religious grounds. That's exactly what I am saying. Modern life has gone past. Again, I am going to tell you something which for a moment may sound shocking. Modern life has gone past the age of religions. It has entered a spiritual age. And I do differentiate between the two. Why? Religion is largely with the externalities. It's a belief system. You have to, you know, conform to certain things. There are traditions, rituals, etc., etc. Spiritual life is about your own inner awakening, your inner journey, your own inner truth unfolding toward the highest. So there is a difference. I had a very, the first book that I had written, Death, Dying and Beyond. So I was noting experiences of certain people who had near-death experiences. They came back. So one was very fascinating, which I have quoted in the book, where a person goes and meets a being of light. That's the common thing which many describe. And he asks him, which religion do you really prefer? And that being of light says, I don't care what religion you belong to. It's so logical. At the end of the day, your actions matter more than what you believe in. You can't be slaughtering human beings and saying, I'm doing it in the name of religion and God will be very happy. It's not a Sholay film dialogue going on, no? Bahut khush hoga, Sardar. He may say, you're an idiot. So make your own choices, including the kind of God you want to. Start with a conception. What is God? You start with your own highest. And then see, what do you prefer? I prefer a God with whom I can play, who loves, who handholds, who is forgiving forever, who picks me out when needed, shows me the right path. I prefer that kind of God. Rather than a strict disciplinarian God, thus thou shalt do or thus thou shalt not do, else you will rot in hell forever. I want such a God, better not have one. That's how many, you know, scriptures sometimes put it like that, no? You will roast in hell. Sometimes eternally damned in hell. I said, such a God I don't believe in. If he has to roast me in hell, I'm fine with it. I could say this because I said I know Krishna. So I have a God who is a fellow playmate, everything. He is a guru, he is a teacher, he is a hero warrior, he is a leader, he is a lover, he is a beloved, everything at once. And then, of course, that time I didn't know Shurbinder and the mother, but then you see the mother, you see all the things she fulfills. Yeah, you were saying something.
I wanted to ask, so then how can you make sure that you obviously can't convince people to have the same beliefs as you, but then in a way it's better if people don't live in fear of their God. So
yes.
How do you think we'd be able to make that impact for other people?
We have to live our truth, the more the merrier. Now, without converting anyone. But you see, nature is doing it. Many parents are having this problem. My children are not following the traditions. There are many people who have left their religions, but they don't use the word. Partly because of fear of social conformity. I could give you a number of examples. This nature is doing it because evolutionary power is taking us to the next stage. Aurobindo used the word spiritual age of mankind. To the Satyug in the real sense. What was the religion in Satyug? There were no religions. Man discovered his own inner truth and lived by it. You don't need laws, you don't need regulations, you don't need it. These things are a sign of a very imperfect society. That somebody has to tell me what I should do. Not only that, somebody, because of fear of punishment, I am doing something or not doing something. As if I don't have my own understanding of what I should do and not do. Okay, so there are two questions. Yeah, okay, so both of you can.
Yeah, so even like doing your religious prayers and stuff is considered wrong.
It's not about right and wrong. It's about how you connect with what is your conception of God. You may do the same prayer. But which is the God you are addressing to? You don't have to do anything. But I'll tell you one thing. What is really prayer? It's a good question you have raised. So tell me one thing. I had a parrot as a child, and in my home there was a parrot. And that parrot was taught the Gayatri Mantra. Actually, you know, it couldn't say fully, but do you think that the parrot would have arrived at Param Gati? It's not about prayer, is not a parroting of a set formula. Prayer is something which arises from the heart. It makes a living connection with the divine. Divine doesn't care what book you are reading. All books belong to him. He wants to live, connect with you as a person. You may have read no book in the world. And yet, he is ready to listen. You may not even know the language. The Jews, you know, pray in Torah and the Muslims in Arabic and the Hindus in Sanskrit and the Christians in English or Latin, whatever. But there are plenty of people, Japanese, plenty of people who don't have, there are people who are not educated. Do you think he will not listen to them? Probably he'll listen much more. I had a little incident in Odisha where in a school, little school where children of 7th, 8th grade were there, and one of the child asked me, which language does God listen? So I said, you tell me. So one of the child said, Odia. So I said, why? He said, whenever I pray in Odia, mother answers. I say it's equally true of those who know French, who know English, who know, or probably they know no language, but the heart feels. So prayer is something which rises from the heart. And somebody wrote it. If you can connect with it, wonderful. Nothing wrong. But if you don't connect with it, discover your own prayer. So that's how it should be. That's your hotline, your current. Now, of course, prayers which have been there for a long time, like Om, they carry a power because they've been there. But still, I may not connect with it. So I can discover my own way of saying. Sometimes you don't need to do a prayer. Just go to conceive the divine within and say, I love you. That's it. You think he will not like it? He'll say, blasphemous girl. You're not supposed to love me like this. You can say that. You can tell him that I am going for a movie. Will you come with me? I am telling you, these are real life experiences of people. One of the girls who had come here, she was daughter of America's then president, Woodrow Wilson's daughter, Margaret Wilson, then during the First World War. So when this girl, when she was 15, she was reading the Gita, and then she came across essays on the Gita. But just before that, at 15, she went to a garden, she was lying, she was feeling very happy with that. Ah, this is so lovely. And then she had that Semitic conception of God who doesn't enjoy all this. He is there in some paradise and we are here. So she said, I wish you could enjoy what I am feeling. And she was flooded with so much joy that she couldn't bear. And then in her heart sprang this message. Who else do you think is enjoying all this? Her mind was blown away. He's here. He's enjoying the garden with me. And then she came, of course, to the ashram. She lived here. Sri Aurobindo gave her the name Nishtha. Such a life. Make a real living connection with God. That is spirituality. Nobody else defines your connection with God. It's your thing. That's beautiful. And you don't need to share that password with everybody and convert. You know what? This mantra works. Therefore, it will work for you. It may not work for you at all. For somebody else at all. It's your secret. How beautiful to keep these secrets. What is happening between you and the divine? Isn't it beautiful? Don't you hide sometimes your deepest, most intimate secrets? That's how it is. Form that living relation with the divine. Yes, you were saying.
A lot of religions have disappeared over time.
Yes, good observation.
And the ones which have stayed even up till now.
They are also disappearing. See, after so many thousand years, Egyptian religion, do you know how long it lasted?
Centuries. Thousands.
Thousands of years. Just if you look at Ramses, you know, the king, the pharaohs. How many pharaohs? If you see, you can calculate. Nordic religions. Many of the primitive religions lasted for thousands of years. And today people don't even know. I have studied the religions fairly well, but I still get confused about the Nordic gods and all. They've gone without, a trace. Many of the religions, 1,000 years, 2,000 years old, they are going to disappear. In India, in Sanatana Dharma, the gods have changed. Indra of the Vedas is very different from Indra of the Puranas. So, they must evolve. But the spiritual core remains. That's why Sanatana Dharma understood that very well. So the gods changed, the ways of life changed. Nobody does a typical havan these days except in some special yagishalas. But it understood the core is in you. That's why. So religions are dated by their very nature. They have a certain context, certain background, certain space and time in which they come. And then they die as mankind evolves. And that's their destiny. But the spiritual core will always remain. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You can ask.
So my question is, so even if you are an individual who now has that belief in spirituality and you are letting, whatever guide you, how can you help other people who are other people that are at the hand of suffering and people who don't have that belief in spirituality?
Okay. So, suffering is one part, because suffering is not only because of their beliefs. Suffering is for... But others who live your life with authenticity and courage. Be an example. That is the best way. Then everything that you speak, everything that you do will have an impact. As you said, you will be guided. When you are guided, automatically you will do things. You don't have to do another religion in the name of no religion. Beyond religions, I have a new cult. It is called Beyond Religions. You don't have to do anything. That's how cults get formed. Rama didn't start any new religion. But Rama becomes an icon for centuries, generations to follow. Krishna did nothing. In fact, he broke many of the traditions. Most of the traditions he broke. And yet Krishna is today so many different people from different background, different religions, they look up to Krishna. Always it is live life in the true and authentic way. That's the way which people really... And don't do it even for impact. Do it as naturally as a flower blossoms. What should a flower do to spread its beauty to the world? Nothing. Blossom fully. Who will come? Who will get, enjoy its beauty? Who will drink the nectar? Who will be happy with its fragrance? Is not its work. Sun helps by being itself fully. So be fully. Be your highest self that you can become. That is the best way to help the world. And obviously that includes your interactions. So when you interact, when you have people meeting you in different ways, different forums, speak from your highest truth. And see, that will have a much, much more, because it's an age of authenticity that we are entering. It's not an age of authority. Just know that age of authority is over. It's the age of authenticity, and I'm sure you all understand what I mean. So be authentic. That's it. Yeah.
Can you be capable of preventing, like not evil people, but people who are saying who are still authoritarian? Is there any way you can prevent that while being authentic, or is that something? Yes, people who are authoritarian.
So there is a whole word that the mother used for all these kind of people, and she used the word old world. Old world. So old world lives by authority, by ego, I am right, by their own set of fixed beliefs. But new world, which is all of us here, we question, we don't condemn anything, but we are discovering new ways of life. That's the broad rubric of spiritual, okay? So the more we grow, you can start a small little group. You know, that's how groups start. That small little group where people share these higher, deeper truths. And as they grow, the more you will see that automatically that there is a cascading effect. You know, you must have heard the word morphogenetic resonance. So, okay, I'll quickly tell you this, then maybe we can, I think, probably go now or something. So, morphogenetic resonance is a study where they they gave rats in Australia, India, America, Europe. I'm randomly, taking names, but different places, 100 rats all over the world, to solve a puzzle, maze, So it took them time. All of the rats in different places were trying to solve. Then one set of rats solved it, let's say in Australia. Immediately, rats all over the world could solve it very fast. That's called morphogenetic resonance, and there are different terms for it. And therefore, it's also called ripple effect, chaos effect, but let's not get into semantics. The point is, if one person lives a true life, his very life has a ripple effect. First on those few people who are around, then in enlarging circles. And that is the best way, rather than trying to convert people. And why convert? Because in the new age, each will discover in his own way the unique connection with the divine. And let them discover. Even like Mother and Sri Aurobindo, it's something very beautiful about the ashram. There is no fixed, enforced common code or common practice. So people connect in their own beautiful. This was one of the things which I loved. Okay, so you'll discover. But sects and cults want it standardized. So there is no one single standardized formula. That's the old world. Old world mind cuts things into standardized perfection. For example, there is a president in a country. If you don't wear suit, he says, you are not worthy of even entering my presidential house. You know what I mean, right? Yeah, no. Isn't it so silly? So this is mind, old world, which wants standard formulas. I had this problem in Air Force myself, that in the, on summer in Jorhat, in evening, I have to wear full sleeves and boots and all to enter the mess, to eat. This is not fair, It's, of course, they justify sundown, sleeve down, but yeah, there is a dress code. You have to wear a tie. I said, tie I am not going to put, for God's sake. So after some time, people get used to it. So after some time, during farewell, my that boss, the biggest boss, he said, whatever it is, he didn't do all the standard things that we expect him, but he's a man of integrity. He was good in his profession. That's what at the end counts. So initially people will maybe point fingers. Later on they will respect you for who you are and what you are. And that's the best example. Be an example. Then your words will carry a meaning. If one is not living those truths, what happened to parents? They say all the good things, standard books. Why is it that people don't really trust them, or sometimes they have issues? Because they see your whole life you are not living. So be a living example. Then your words will carry a meaning, your writing will carry a meaning. It will flow from the authentic source. Okay? Yeah. So I think that's it. So lovely to interact with all of you. Thank you.